Don't be afraid, it is a gamble, and as an accountant, I'm going to be like the defender on the football team, and business owner will be the forward on the football team. But he only can score the goals if he's got the ball. So score the goals. Be brave, be confident, go out and do what you're best at.
Hello and welcome to the Start, Build and Grow podcast. I'm your host, Rob Lawrence, and in this short podcast series, you're going to learn how to run and grow your business more effectively, gaining insights and inspiration from our panel of hand-selected coaches, mentors and experts in the enterprise community. In the next few weeks, you'll learn things to consider at the start of your business journey, how to run your business effectively, and tips on everything from finance to marketing to managing people and strategy to help you develop and grow a sustainable and profitable business. Before we begin and get stuck in, don't forget to follow and subscribe to this podcast through your favorite podcast player app. Welcome to the second episode in the Start, Build, Grow podcast series, where we're going to be exploring the exciting world of numbers and the importance of understanding your finances as a small business owner. Now, before you press skip or pause, I can assure you that my guest today will more than bring this exciting topic to life. Today, I have with me the Dublin-born and bred Tony Lawlor from the Business Growth Coaches Network and the Start, Build, Grow program. From an early age, Tony tells me that he's always been excited by numbers and was top of the class in maths at primary school. And with over 25 years of experience in finance and operations, Tony has a reputation for enhancing the performance of organisations as a skilled and expert leader, working with people at all levels to understand their needs and provide the best advice and guidance possible. And my short conversation with Tony today is packed full of tips and great guidance, as you will hear. So it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you today, Tony Lawlor. Tony, very warm welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Rob. Delighted to be here.
Good to have you. So why is it important for business owners to know and understand their finances?
Well, the finances are everything. They're there to make money, presumably, and make profit. And if you think about it, 810,000 businesses were created in 21-22. And one in five of them fail in the first year, predominantly down to lack of cash. And at the end of the day, this business is likely going to be paying their mortgage or could be their only source of income. And businesses don't generally fail because they don't have enough sales. They fail because they don't have enough cash. So while it's a big gamble, it's a very important to manage your cash and have a lot of control early doors around your cash.
So understanding cash and cash flow is a really important thing.
Cash is king or cash is queen in today's world, and that remains very much the case.
So with that in mind, what are some of the common mistakes that you see business owners making in relation to their finances?
Probably they overcommit early doors in signing up to new contracts, maybe taking on staff too early in terms of a permanent member of staff, in terms of looking to do other things. They pick the wrong structure in terms of the legal entity. They pick the wrong name, wrong accounting system. But very much you do learn by making mistakes, but it's how many mistakes and how quickly you learn and move on. Another common mistake is they mix and match their personal bank account and their business bank account, which will unravel at some stage and cause them angst. And you very much need to keep a personal log of how much money you're putting into the business, because at the end of the day, you want to take out that money at some stage. And another thing they try and do is they try to do everything, and you can't be a jack of all trades. You've got to, and there's nothing wrong with outsourcing if you do it properly. So I think overcommitting and not overcommitting.
You mentioned a few good points there worthy of further consideration. Interesting one about the personal and business accounts getting mixed up. And I can understand how some people getting into business in the early days are perhaps in that experimentation phase, and then they start getting into business quite quickly. Is that something that you see?
I do see. And a lot of banks offer free banking for the first 18 months, 24 months. And with that becomes access to accounting systems, and you can do your invoicing from the bank. It works all on the apps. It's very, very easy. It's very intuitive. And you can do transfers between into your personal account very easy, just like using any app. So it is very easy to separate them. And it is very important you do separate them. From a tax point of view, it will come back and haunt you or bite you. And you'll end up losing more money because, let's be honest, you don't always record everything you put in, whether it's being travel expenses, hotel expenses, buying a piece of kit. You just whip out the personal credit card and say, I'll charge it back later. Mm. But you forget to, because it's your business. And you think they're one of the same thing, but they're not.
Yeah. Sounds like things could get very messy very quickly from that point of view.
They can do, yes.
Yeah. So what would your guidance be to someone, perhaps they haven't started their business yet, or maybe they're in the very early stages in terms of that? It sounds like in terms of the actual technology, getting a business bank account up and running is pretty straightforward. What would your guidance be? Who should a business owner seek, and what sort of questions should they be asking?
Initially, they just want the bank account is very simple and plain. They don't want an overdraft. They're not going to get one. They don't have a history. So they just want a very basic bank account that can do invoicing. And with the bank accounts you can get these days, you can add your own logo, you can add your own invoice template, you can bill out direct, and it's very easy and very, very, very intuitive. The main banks are offering these free services to new businesses free of charge for 18 months. Some of them come with free agent accounting software, or a Xero or a QuickBooks as free as for 6 or 9 months as well. So it's very much a win-win. So why wouldn't you is the question.
It sounds like you'd have to have good, compelling reasons not to do it in
Indeed,
the way that you're describing.
Yeah.
And it keeps things nice and clean and simple. And I guess you're going to have to do it sooner or later anyway. And it sounds to me like one of those business systems, one of those business processes that is worth getting organised from the off.
Very much so. I'm self-employed. I have my own business and I use the Metal bank account via NatWest.
Yeah.
And it's excellent. There's no bank charges for the first 2 years. It integrates with Xero, QuickBooks. It comes with Free Agent and other accounting software. Integrates with the HMRC.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to just generate an invoice and whack it off. And you can add your own logo as well to the invoice template.
Yeah.
And it's very, very easy.
Yeah, great. So coming back to some of the other mistakes that you see business owners make, what could they be doing to avoid those? Or what could they be doing in the earlier stages that you see a lot of small business owners not doing that would really set them out well, similar to a bank account further down the line?
So many business owners don't put in place a business plan. They just have a notion to set up a business and they think they see an opportunity and they get up and running and they don't put in place a business plan, what's going to happen in the first 12 months. And they're going to need a business plan because they're going to look to apply for grants, for the bank loans, to apply to an office, property, whether they might need a vehicle. They're going to need a business plan at some stage. And the business plan is there to a road journey of where they want to get to. Mm. And yes, things will change. Yes, they'll need to add to it, take from it, but it should be there. So a lot of business don't have a business plan in place, which again, they're going to have to come back to at some stage because you can't run a business without some type of plan of why you set it up in the first place and where do you hope you go. And likewise, once your business is up and running, you should ideally have an exit strategy in 3, 5, 7 years out. What you want to do, because you're not going to be in the business forever. Chances are these days you won't be passing down to your children because they won't be interested.
Yeah.
Or the tax regime is crippling. So you might elect you want to get out in 5, 7 years time. So you need an exit strategy. So you need a business plan coming in and you need an exit strategy coming out.
Yeah, great. Some great points there to pick up on then, Tony. Firstly, the business plan. What would your guidance be there in terms of how complex or how simple that business plan should be? I can imagine for some business owners, I imagine most have heard of a business plan, but they might not know what's involved or where to even begin putting one together. So I'd be keen to get your thoughts and ideas on that, as well as how the finance element sits within that too.
Keep it simple. You're talking about 2 or 3 pages and you're really just You're starting with your mission statement. What did you set yourself for? Obviously, you saw an opportunity. Something came to you. There was a spark. So build it around that. What are you here for? And then look to talk about your competition, what your marketplace is, what challenges, who your customers are going to be, how you're going to pitch yourself, where you're going to pitch yourself, what investment you need, what resources you need, what risks are going to come into it. But very much just bullet points that you can work on and it very much needs to be a live document because you will be revisiting it and you will make mistakes. You will be going back to it, updating it. And it's a bit like a CV when you go back for the job when you fine-tune it to depending on the job. And it's very much a business plan is much the same, because you will be asked for it 10, 12, 15 times in the first 12 months.
Yeah, I really like that idea of treating it like a CV. I've never thought of it in those sorts of terms before, where actually, as a live document, it's something you update, you review every so often. How often do you suggest reviewing that document?
I'd say probably once a month, to be honest. Probably in conjunction with your LinkedIn page, you should be reviewing it once a month. And it only takes half an hour or an hour to see, is it still valid? Mm. Is there a new opportunity come your way? Is there something that's going to scare you, that's going to cost a lot more money? Do you need to change your direction? Have you seen, by selling one product or service, have you now tagged onto another product or service? And I've often seen many businesses set up with the sole intention of selling one product or service. 12 months down the line, all their market is from something else.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah. And just digging into the finance side of that, what should business owners be thinking about in terms of their business planning in the early days? What are the key measures, I suppose, or the key criteria for a finance plan that fits into that business plan?
Having enough cash for 3, 6, 9 months, because chances are you ain't going to get revenue for the first 3, 6, 9 months. You need to pay your bills, but you need to be selling product or service as well. And if you're selling product, you have to buy stock and you need to pay for that somehow. If you're selling a service, predominantly you're selling yourself. So there's less commitment. But nevertheless, you need enough cash to keep you going for 3, 6, 9 months. One way or the other, whether you're going to borrow it, an overdraft, you have savings, but you need that cash. Yeah.
So that sounds like a cash forecast of kinds.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. And what sort of things should we be including in that? From a keeping it simple, what sort of things could we be thinking about in terms of that cash forecast? How would you map that out on a simple spreadsheet, for example, Tony?
Well, you start with the revenue, what income you're going to get month by month, then basically the cost of sales, what it's going to cost to generate that income, and they should match each other ideally. If you're going to sell something, there is a cost, whether you're renting an office, you're buying a product, you're selling a service, whatever. And then underneath that, you're going to have overheads in terms of the running business, the cost to run your business, whether you're renting an office or a hot desk, the cost of software, professional fees, bank charges, and all the audit fees, all those other incidentals that do add up. So basically, there's three elements: your revenue, your cost of sales, and your running costs.
Yeah.
And hopefully the revenue is more than the other two, and you have a net positive.
Got it. That's really useful. And could you just explain a little bit about the difference between your operating costs and cost of sales?
Indeed. The cost of sales are very much linked to your revenue. If you don't have revenue, you shouldn't have cost of sales. That's hopefully. Where your operating costs are more or less fixed. They are, if you have an office, you'll have rates and you can't get out of it. If you have an office, you'll have a photocopier, you'll have a printer. They're fixed costs as such. You might have a member of staff who you've taken on. That's a fixed cost. So they're your fixed costs, and they're there regardless you have revenue or not.
Got it. Yeah, that's really useful. And yeah, just hearing your sort of description there of that simple cash flow, I can see how I imagine that would be something else that you review with that business plan. And I guess you're looking at actuals as well at the same time to seeing how you're doing.
And as you look at the actuals, you'll get better at the forecasting. As you look at the actuals over time, you'll get more comfortable and you'll get more accurate with the cash flow forecasting. And you'll know exactly when your peaks are and when the opposite are, where you're going to potentially need that overdraft, need to use your credit card, potentially lend the business money. And you'll learn this over time.
Yeah, so useful data then going forward.
Very useful data, yeah.
Yeah, and as you accumulate more data, obviously you get more business insights. And
you do, yeah.
Yeah, as you suggest, you start to spot the trends in terms of your own particular market niche. Brilliant. So let's go to the other end. You mentioned having an exit strategy of sorts. I'm curious to learn more about that, Tony. Investment seems to be quite a hot topic in small business circles these days. With an exit type strategy in mind, and more recently, actually, I've heard it may not just be the fact that you might want to sell the business, but if something happens to you and the business case has to get taken over, perhaps to support your family or dependents, there's all sorts of reasons you might want to consider or at least have some kind of exit strategy there. But one of those reasons might actually be to scale your business. Acquisitions, another one, and access to finances and investors is something that I know a number of small businesses look at. So with all of that in mind, Tony, I'm keen to learn more from your experience. What do investors look for when they're evaluating a business or keeping an eye on a business that's growing?
They want to see a business that's very well run. It's got recurring sales. And when I say recurring sales, I mean repeat customers. They want to see a business where the culture is good. The accounts are tidy. The balance sheet, the profit and loss are tidy. They want to see a strong forecast in sales going forward. They want to see a business that maximizes cash, minimizes their debt. They want to see a business where the business owner can extract themselves very quickly, i.e. there's a good management team there.
Mm.
There's no point buying a business if the business is the owner or vice versa, because the managing director, CEO, needs to be able to walk away and there has to be a management team there who can stand up.
Mm.
They want to see where there's working capital, i.e. they're going to get their money back in a short period. Potential, they want to see potential. And you got to remember, there's a lot more businesses out there for sale than people wanting to buy them.
Mm.
So you got to dress it up and make yourself as attractive as possible. And it's a bit like selling your house. You've got to make it yourself as attractive as possible.
Mm, great. Some great points there, Tony. And one of the points you made there about actually they're buying the business, they're not buying the managing director.
Very true, yeah.
Yeah. So with that in mind, what sort of hints and tips could you offer to someone that's perhaps very integrated in a business? And I know that's very true for lots of small businesses. And I've often heard about the small business owner being the bottleneck in their business. Yeah. So I think there's something that speaks to perhaps mindset there, Tony. What sort of suggestions and how have you supported people to sort of move away from, being too integrated in their business over time?
Well, to be honest, they need to go away on holiday for a month and not look at their mobiles or emails and see what happens.
Yeah.
And let the management team manage.
Yeah.
The clue is there. You elect the management team, let them manage, let them make the mistakes. And in making mistakes, you will be adding value to your business because a potential investor will see this business has a strong management team. He has demonstrated me. He's went to Australia for a month. He didn't take his phone with him. And they managed. They got on with it. They met with the customers. There was proper account management. The money kept coming into the business. As you said, the people are buying the business. They're not buying the owner.
Mm.
So very much they want the owner out as quick as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although they might keep the owner on as a shareholder, as an advisor. But that could only be for 12, 18, 24 months probably.
Mm. Yeah. That's great. Thanks for that, Tony. Just coming back to that point, the earlier point there about the actual value of the business. When we're talking about the value of the business, what do we actually mean?
The value, this is me coming as an accountant now, the value of business is very much an art. It's not a science.
Okay.
And I know that's an unusual thing to say, but it is.
Right.
But from a starting point of view, it's based on the maintainable earnings, i.e. the profit. And you adjust the profit for a number of one-offs. If you have one-off items, you plus or minus, and you take away depreciation. But you're talking about the earnings you're making each year. And then you multiply that by something called the multiplier. And the multiplier is something based on the sector you're in, what growth potential you have, the risk profile. And the multiplier could be as high as 8 for a software development company or a pharmaceutical company, or as low as 3 or 4 for a construction company or a retail company. So you're basically looking at your profits adjusted, multiplied by your multiplier, and that gives you a rough idea of the value of your business. Well, I can't stress enough, you have to make your business as attractive as possible. And if you were selling a house, you'd paint the doors, you'd paint the internals. There's certain things you do to make it as attractive as possible.
Yeah.
Because the buyer will be looking to take off value and you're looking to add on value. And it is very much a game. And this is where the art comes into it.
Got it. Yeah. So a couple of thoughts and questions on just that alone then, Tony. Regarding the multipliers, there's different multipliers. It sounds like for different industries.
There is, yeah.
Right, okay. And that's
and
how that
these
works.
Are not set. These are based on volumes that have gone through in the last 6, 9, 12 months in the marketplace. But obviously some companies, software companies and pharmaceutical companies notoriously give a higher returns. A lot of money's gone into setting them up to give better returns and value. Sales are more predictable. Where construction companies and retail companies are at the bottom end of the food chain as such, there's more risk. So yes, there is a multiplier. And there's a big difference between the number eight and the number four, the number three in terms of that multiplier.
Yeah. So that's really good to know. So depending what industry you're in, it could very much influence how that business is valued.
It will influence how the business is valued.
Yeah, great. So the other thought and question I had around that is in terms of actually making your business as attractive as possible, what would you recommend? Is that something you do just before exit or is that something you do over time?
No, about 18 to 24 months out, you should start planning.
Right.
All these things that we spoke about, extracting yourself, signing up your customers, will they do repeat sales, getting them in contracts, working on the culture of the business, is everybody happy, doing appraisals, tidying up your balance sheet as much as possible, minimizing bad debts, being able to demonstrate everything is sound, because whoever looks to buy your business will want to be doing due diligence. And they will be crawling into everything financial and non-financial. They'll want to see procedures, quality procedures, sales procedures. They'll want to see the HR records. They'll want to see training. They'll want to talk to your bank. They'll want to talk to some customers. So it's very much about getting your house in order.
Yeah.
And the more you get your house in order, that helps your multiplier.
Yeah.
It can be the difference between 5 and 6. And if your profit is £500,000 a year, that's £500,000 on value.
Yeah, that's really useful and revealing to hear that it's not just about the finances, even though today we're talking about the finances. It's very much about the holistic.
It is your website, your marketing material, your culture, your HR records, disciplinary records, quality control, everything.
Coming back to sort of managing the business and financial milestones and measuring. We've talked a little bit about cash flow there and cash management. KPIs is a term that's used quite a lot in small business or in all aspects, all sizes of business. But it may be that for our new business owner, KPIs is a bit of an unknown term. So could you talk to a little bit about what KPIs are, both from a financial and a non-financial perspective, and what sort of KPIs we should be thinking about as small business owners?
KPIs are the key performance indicators, and I'd probably for the first 6 or 9 months not focus in too much on that, because you need to get the data.
Right.
Still focus in on cash, and very much cash is king, cash is queen. And while you're setting yourself up, because you do need a history of data there before you can set KPIs, because you need to benchmark yourself against something, and you need to put in place a target. But very much down to cash, which is the most important key performance indicator of all, is get your sales invoices out as soon as possible. As soon as you deliver on the product or service, get the invoice out the door. A sale is not a sale till the money is in the bank, in my world.
Yeah.
Don't be over generous on payment terms. If it takes you 3 months to do a service or a product and you're in month four, you're invoicing, you don't want to give 90 days credit. Because that'll be another, it'll be 6 months from when you started. Be proactive in credit control. A lot of businesses are going bust at the moment. You need to be proactive in credit control. That's difficult.
Yeah.
Credit control is hard. Ringing people and chasing for money is difficult. There's a lot of rejection, a lot of false promises. You need to sell to reputable people. There's no point. You need to do a bit of due diligence, a credit check on who you're selling to and why you're selling to them. Not just it's a sale. It's not. It's only a sale if they're going to pay you. And also important is you price at the right level. So many businesses start off and they go in too low with their prices. They forget about their operating costs. They think of the revenue and they think of the cost of sales. But they forget, I'm going to get a rates bill. I'm going to get a bill from the auditors. I'm going to get a bill for parking, travel, all the other little incidentals that do add up. I need to take some money out of the business myself. All these things do add up. So it's important to price yourself right. from very early onwards, because otherwise you're going to have to increase your price. And it's better going in right at the start rather than have to increase it after 3 or 6 months. That only upsets customers.
Yeah, I guess it's easier to start high and come down than to start low and try and move up.
It is indeed. I think it is, yeah. Yeah.
Just with all of that in mind, what other guidance would you offer in terms of actually managing the profit and loss of a business?
When you're starting off, it's very much a case of what you want and what you need. And they're two different words. You want an office, but you need a hot desk. You have to be very frugal. You want staff on your books, but maybe you should just get them on a fixed term contract or get self-employed staff or outsource. So you've got to think what you actually need to run your business and what you want. The want can come in year two, year three, when you're successful and you've met your milestones. You have to get there. Mm-hmm. So just be frugal. And I know that's alien to people who want a website, they want an office, they want the branding. But you've got to be slow and steady. You've got to build up your customer base and they've got to be paying. Money's got to be coming into the business. So think about the want versus the need. About every purchase you make. Do I want it or do I need it?
Yeah.
And if you go with what you need and pull off what you want, it'll go a long way.
Yeah. Some great advice there, Tony. And you've got me thinking again there about some of the key points that you made earlier in terms of, you know, the cost of sales there and also some of your operating costs and getting really clear on the things you actually need to make the business happen. And rather than just the desirables, which are the nice things to have, which, as you suggest, could come further down the line. So with that in mind, it's probably good to have financial milestones of a kind. In the early days, what would you say are the important milestones to have? What are good targets to have for a small business owner?
A gross margin percentage was a good one. If you sell a product for £100 and the cost of sales is £60, you've got a gross margin of £40 there, or 40%. You need to know for your industry, your sector, what is a good gross margin percentage. And you will have done your research when you set up a business, how much are your competitors charging? If you're setting up a business, you will know how much it costs. So that should give you an indicator of what the margin is and what you should sell at. So a gross profit margin is very important. To understand that and get that right, not to be too high or not to be too low. And over time, you'll pitch it at the, and of course, you might decide to discount because you want to win a big new customer, but you've got to know when to discount and when not to discount and hold your ground at the same time. At the end of the day, it's your reputation, your product or service and your integrity. And likewise, when you're buying in a product or service, you've got to barter.
Yeah.
You've got to ask for discounts. You've got to do favours. You've got to, I'll rub your back on that if you rub my back on this. And buy in cheap. Buy quality, but buy in cheap. Keep your cost of sales down if possible. And it's not easy. It doesn't come naturally to people. If you're booking a meeting room or if you're going to travel into London, don't travel in at 8 o'clock in the morning. Travel in, have an afternoon meeting.
Yeah.
So obviously you're going to stay away. Look around how best where you're going to stay away, be frugal and back to the what you need versus what you want.
Yeah, sounds like lots of sort of self-growth opportunities there in terms of developing your approach towards business and some of your bartering skills there, and also just becoming a little bit more financially savvy in terms of, as you suggest, you know, times to travel and pricing and also negotiating.
Yeah, and there's opportunities to look at corporate cards like Pleo and Saldo, which are very, very good. And you can get these cards without paying up front. It's like a deposit. You just put £500 or £1,000 on it and then you use them. And they link into your accounting software and bank software and they're fantastic. So using things like that, and there's loads of fantastic apps out there to use to make your life easier.
Yeah.
And you should embrace them and endorse them. Running a business, there's 100 million different things to do and you can't do them all.
Yeah, it sounds like there's some great technology available there in terms of helping you to manage it. So
there is, yeah.
It can do some of the legwork for you, but it's a case of just keeping focused on a few key elements of the business.
Very much so. And the most important is your bank balance, obviously driven by your sales and getting the money in.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned gross margin and understanding the gross margin for your product, service or industry. I'm curious, How does a business owner find that detail out?
Doing research.
Yeah.
Getting a quote from a competitor.
Okay.
Just going on online and getting a shopping basket and see how much, and then do some research. And if they do the research, they can see if someone, how much they're charging you, and then they can find out how much it actually costs. Talk to the people. They haven't gone into this marketplace for nothing.
Yeah.
So they must have an idea. They must have some skill set to decide to go into the marketplace. So they must have friends or other colleagues who've done it around the country. Mm. Network. Go to events, research. And
yeah.
the internet is fantastic. There's a lot of stuff on there.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice emphasis there, Tony, on research before starting that business. Or if you're in the early days, just doing as much research as you can.
Yeah. Get your competitors to provide you with a quote. You don't have to see it through, but go onto their website, look at their brochures, their literature.
Yeah.
You can learn so much from it.
Yeah. That's great. So, in terms of like coming back to the business vision and the business plan, what guidance would you offer to business owners in terms of managing the reality versus their expectations? I imagine most business owners are ambitious, let's hope so, and they've got a big vision. But there's going to be times where it might feel like the business is just really struggling to work towards that vision.
Yeah, very much it's like the swan. You want to show to the world that you're like a swan, graceful and in control, and the reality is you're not.
Yeah.
Underneath, you're paddling like mad.
Yeah.
And you've got to present this. You've got to present this swan light to the world. You've got to present that it's not just you. You've got the backup. You've got resources. You've got a nice website. You've got structure. You've got resources. You've got control. But the reality is, it's you.
Mm.
And on a Sunday night, you've got the stress and the pressures on Monday morning. But sometimes, if you spend all day saying to people how good you are, sometimes you can believe that. And the reality is, you're not. And you've got to be grounded. And hopefully you'll have a partner or a friend who will provide that grounding. And I think that's fundamental. Someone who does provide that grounding for you.
Yeah. So you're touching upon something which sounds quite important there, Tony, which is who you surround yourself with. I know for some micro business owners and entrepreneurs, actually, it can be quite a lonely and isolating place. You very much just involved in the work, out there doing, often working very hard, many number of hours in the earlier days. So what would you say towards sort of having the right people around you and building your own support network? What are some of the key people that you need by your side to succeed with this?
There's lots of networking events. Eventbrite is great.
Yeah.
If there's 800,000 businesses setting up every year, there's going to be a lot of them in East Anglia. So go to events, talk to other people, talk to Chamber of Commerce. You don't have to join them. And there's other similar events. And they run a lot of free resources and free events out there.
Mm.
If you're setting up a new business, chances are you will think about going for an accountant. And you need to decide whether you have the financial skills to run the business or not. And if you don't, you definitely need someone there to support you and guide you. And we can talk about the pitfalls of the HMRC and being friendly with them or them becoming an enemy very quickly. And and a lot of people are afraid of finances. But if you've elected to set up a business, unfortunately, you have to get on with it.
Mm.
And you can't just delegate your finances to everybody.
Mm.
It's just one person. That's so wrong. A very big business mistake is just delegating.
Yeah. I imagine no matter how well or perhaps poorly you understand the world of accounting and finances, as the business owner, you're ultimately, in the early days, certainly responsible for them. So it's a case of
you are very much responsible for them. And under government legislation, there's the Criminal Finance Act 2017, and you have a duty of care to ensure robust controls are in place. And you can be accused of tax evasion if these controls are not in place. And as a member of your staff goes and does something that defrauds the HMRC. So there's a lot of responsibility. There's a lot of duty of care. And likewise, Companies House can penalise and charge you interest and penalties, as can the HMRC. So it is a big decision to make to go into business, but it's very rewarding when you get it right.
Mm.
But you do need to understand the finances without a shadow of a doubt, or have someone there to support you and guide you. And over time, finance for non-finance managers teach you, train you, show you the key KPIs, what you need to look for. Explain the concept of sale is only a sale when the money's in your bank.
Yeah.
Explain how to price right. Explain how to structure the P&L, how to structure your nominal coding so you get the report you want. And as I said, after 6 or 9 months, then you can decide on what your KPIs are and you'll have some data to benchmark against.
Yeah, that's great. And I imagine for some business owners, perhaps certainly more for those that are cost conscious, they're probably a bit concerned about what the cost might be for the fees of hiring an accountant or somebody who can offer them financial advice in the early days. I understand there's a wealth of support out there, some of which may be available free. What's been your experience, Tony, in terms of business owners starting out getting financial advice? Is there much help out there?
There is help out there, but like everywhere else, finding resource at the moment is hard and is no different in the financial sector. It depends on how big your business is, but if you're starting off, Xero, QuickBooks and Free Agent are very, very, very good. And they will, there's default P&Ls and default balance sheets. You don't really have to do much to set them up. They can get you by the first 6, 9, 12 months.
Yeah.
If you're confident on spreadsheets, you can do your accounts on a spreadsheet. And then at the end of the 9, 12 months, have an accountant transfer them on once you start making money.
Yeah.
So you don't need an accounting system from day one. You can do them on a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
But these accounting systems are so easy to, and they're only £10 or £12 a month for the basic packages.
Yeah.
And some banks give them for free and they are so easy to use. You don't need to be an expert on balance sheets, profit and loss, debits and credits. That will come with time. Mm-hmm. But you do need someone there to support and guide you and answer those questions when you do ask, how do I do a credit note? Because I did an invoice out, but now he wants a credit note.
Yeah.
What happens if he doesn't pay? I've got a brown envelope from the HMRC. What do I do about it? I want to take on my first member of staff. What do I do? Things like that.
Yeah.
I need a forecast for a bank loan. Can you do that as an accountant? You understand the language and what they want.
Yeah.
So you don't have to employ an accountant. You can just dabble in or dabble out when you want.
Great. So just as we begin to wrap up, Tony, a few final questions, if I may. How can business owners reduce risk? You talked about HMRC there. I was curious what sort of guidance you would give to business owners in terms of reducing risk in their business as their business grows.
I would replace the word reduce with the word manage.
Right.
I think every business, risk is very much there in your personal life. It's there in your business life. For an example, if you're going off to Stansted Airport tomorrow morning for an early flight, you will look at the weather, you will look at roadworks. These are all the potential risks. And you'll look how many bags you're going with. You'll look, are you taking the children with you? And these are all you take into consideration. You might decide to book a hotel in the airport the night before. That's the mitigation of the risk. So all these risks are already there in your personal life and you manage risk every day in your personal life. And there's no difference in your business life. So instead of reducing the risk, look to manage the risk. And the key to this is recognize the risk. And there will be risks. And then look to mitigate the risk. What can you do about the risk? And the risk is only a risk if you can do something about it, to be honest. For an example, Brexit was not a risk. And I saw many risk registers and many businesses where they put Brexit was a risk. Brexit isn't a risk. It was a reality. What was a risk is if you were selling to Europe and you had to complete lots of business forms and you didn't have the resource, that's the risk.
Yeah.
Not Brexit. For those forms, you'd have to train a member of staff on customs control and bits and other pieces. So that was the risk. And then the key thing to complete the loop is to review your risk register. It again is another live document and it should be shared with the management. It's not just your document, your risks. It's very much shared with your staff if you've got staff and use it. Managing risk register can be a positive and so many people look at the word risk and see it as a negative and it's not a negative. Every business will have a risk. Everybody in their personal life has risks. And it's just about managing the risks, recognising the risk, owning the risk, mitigating the risk and reviewing the risk.
That's great. And in terms of that risk register, Tony, what structure would that take?
It's very simple. Most are a 5x5 matrix, the likelihood of something happening and the impact.
Right.
And the likelihood, one, it might never happen. 5, it's likely to happen. And the impact it's going to have on your business, 1, it'll have some impact. 5, it'll have a lot of impact.
Yeah.
And you multiply the two of them together, the likelihood and the impact. And if it's up near 25,
yeah,
you should be doing stats, means it's going to be red in colour. You should be doing something about it. And that could be losing a key customer.
Yeah.
Losing a key member of staff, not having enough money,
yeah,
changing legislation, something like that, or cyber attack.
Yeah.
They would be high risks. Something low down, then you could do something to mitigate it. But very much, it's the likelihood it's going to happen versus the impact on your business.
Mm.
And very much, that's how you create it. It's like a matrix,
yeah,
and it's a table. You're not talking about a Word document. You're talking about it just a table, and likelihood and impact and 25 score and rag rated with red, amber and green. Look at the reds and see how you can turn them amber.
Yeah. Great. Some great tips there. Appreciate that, Tony. Is there anything else that we haven't discussed today that you think our listener would be well-versed to know about?
I'll stress again the want versus the need. And that's very much the frugal in the first 12 months. The HMRC, one way or the other, whether it's VAT, corporation tax, PAYE or NI, you're going to come into contact with the HMRC as soon as you register a business, a company's house. You have to register for corporation tax, get a UTR, lots of passwords, lots of security, brown envelopes are turning up. Get on board with the HMRC, put in place a payment plan. They will charge you penalty. They will charge you interest. They very much work on a tolerance type structure. They have tolerance levels and very much pay the return when you're meant to pay the return, the 7th of the quarter for VAT, the 22nd of each month for the PAYE, PI, 10 months after your business has its first year end for the corporation tax. Don't be late and put a payment plan in place. If you put a payment plan in place and you pay things on time, there's less chance of them coming out to pay you a visit.
Mm.
And what you're it's a game.
Yeah.
It is very much a game. You don't want them on to come out and pay you a visit. And how do you do that? By you mitigate it, by paying them, by getting your returns in on time and paying them something amounts. And if you're going to have spikes, if suddenly one quarter your sales go off, and hopefully they will.
Yeah.
Drop them a note saying, oh, I've had a great month, a great quarter, and my sales have spiked for whatever reason. And if you answer that question, it won't spike their tolerance levels.
Yeah.
And it won't trigger a questionnaire or a letter to say why.
Yeah.
It's common sense.
Yeah.
The other thing is, if you're not good with finances, have a lieutenant, someone who is good with finances, mm-hmm, to support you, to guide you. But don't let them do everything. Don't let them become a single point of dependency, a risk to your business.
Yeah.
Give them passwords to your bank accounts and everything else. It's a very... it's a big risk.
Mm.
Let them prepare every payment runs. But you, at the end of the day, you sign them off and you send them.
Yeah.
So those are my three tips.
Great advice there, Tony. Is there anything else that you would want to share with our listener now based on that? You've given some great top tips there. Any other top tips?
Don't be afraid. It is a gamble. And as an accountant, I'm going to be like the defender on the football team, and business owner will be the forward on the football team. But he only can score the goals if he's got the ball.
Yeah.
So score the goals. Be brave. Be confident. Go out and do what you're best at, probably selling.
Mm.
But don't forget your defence.
Yep.
You need the ball. And while the object of football is not to score more goals than the opposition, the object of football is actually to let in less goals.
Yeah.
And it's how many less goals you let in the first 12 months will make sure you're one of those businesses that will succeed, prosper and flourish.
Great analogy to end on there. Tony Lawlor, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Start, Build and Grow podcast. And thank you to Tony for sharing his expertise, experience and knowledge today. In this episode, we talked about understanding the importance of finances as a business owner, including the common mistakes many owners make with financial planning and management. We also talked about the importance of planning for a business exit, even if the idea of exiting your business is a long way from here, and how to create a simple yet evolving business plan. We also explored the management of risk, as well as the importance of cash flow, and how setting financial milestones and targets can support you and your business. To learn more, head on over to startbuildgrow.co.uk. This podcast project has been funded by the UK government through the UK Shared Prosperity Fund and Ipswich Borough Council. Start, Build and Grow is part of the BGCN Group. Discover more business growth, leadership, coaching and enterprise resources at bgcn.co.uk or email us at info@bgcn.co.uk.